You're listening to SBS News.
Cost of Living Secrets, brought to you by Ricardo Gonçalves and Peggy Giacomelos for SBS News.
Peggy, did you know that interest rates are now more likely to fall than rise?
Well, we've had 13 rate rises in such a short period of time, so I guess that's really good news for anyone with a mortgage or looking to get a mortgage.
That's the thing, right? Because interest rates affect different people in different ways. So to tell us more about how to save money every day at the bank, I'm joined by the research director at Rate City, Sally Tindall. Hi, Sally.
Hello, Ricardo. Hello, Peggy.
Hello.
Let's start, because it may sound obvious, but we often paint higher interest rates as a bad thing. But that's only if you're a borrower, because it's different if you're a saver, right?
Absolutely. One in three Australian households have a mortgage. And depending on the size of your mortgage, you really felt the heat from rising interest rates. The other two thirds hopefully have a savings account and are now starting to see decent returns. But you've got to remember, a lot of those people are savers, but they're also renters. They might be saving for their first property and they've seen their rents go up maybe once, twice, potentially even three times in the space of two and a bit years. They've really felt the heat, but also young Australians, even if they're living at home, have really felt the pressures of the rising cost of living. So while savers might be getting some good news finally, their rates might be picking up off the floor, it's still really tough under this cost of living crisis. Mm-hmm.
Sally, let's start with mortgages. How do you know if you've got a good rate on your mortgage?
Well, it's actually a really good question, Peggy, because we've been on this wild roller coaster ride through COVID when rates went down, and then on the back of COVID when rates went sky high. A decent rate at this point in time starts with a 5, not a 6. That's a really very much a stretch target, but let me paint you a picture. Someone who, an owner occupier, that's someone who lives in the home that they own, if they've done absolutely nothing with their variable mortgage rate since the start of the hikes, they're on a rate we estimate of 7.11%. Ouch. But the average owner-occupier rate at this point in time, according to the RBA, is 6.37%. And there are still over 25 lenders on our database that are offering rates under 6%.
So that's good to know. Let's start from the basics. Someone that wants to get a home loan, now knowing that you kind of need to get a 5 at this point of time to know it's a good deal, what actually affects that interest rate? How much control does a bank have over it? And how much is influenced by, say, your credit rating and how much you're borrowing, for example?
So I wouldn't read too much into credit scores, for example, because the banks use them as a quick, simple check. They're looking, you know, at a low credit score as a potential flag. But when you apply for a mortgage or refinance, they're really going a lot deeper than a simple credit score. They're going to look through all your finances. So that's not going to be a big determining factor. What is likely to be is whether you're an owner-occupier, as I mentioned, if you live in the home that you own, or an investor that you might rent out that property to someone else. It matters that you're paying down your debt. That's what's called principal and interest. Rather than paying interest only, you're likely to pay a higher rate if you want interest only terms. The other things that can affect your rate are things like how much equity you have in your home. And I know that word scares a lot of people. What on earth is equity? How much do I have? But if you've got a good track record of paying down your debt for the last 4 or 5 years, if you've seen some decent gains in property prices in that time as well, you're likely to be in the driver's seat when it comes to rates, because if you're an owner-occupier, you committed to paying down your debt and you've been paying off your loan solidly, I think you can aim for a rate, that rate I was talking about, of under 6%.
And Sally, if you feel you're at the stage where you can start renegotiating your mortgage, when is that a good time and how do you go about doing that? What's the simplest way?
Yeah, well, I think one of the key factors, actually, is how often you put the hard word on your lender. That's actually one of the biggest factors. And let me tell you, if you're on a variable rate rather than a fixed one, it is your right to haggle with your lender for a lower interest rate or pick up your home loan and move it to a different lender that's willing to get you a good, decent rate. A lot of people say, oh, look, I just renegotiated my home loan. It was a year ago. I got a decent rate cut. I've already tried that. try again. There's nothing stopping you calling every 6 months. You can even call every 3 months if you wanted to. You're likely to get a couple of no's in those conversations, but you're also likely to get more yeses as well.
How do those conversations typically run? So you literally pick up the phone, you call your bank, and then you say, what?
Okay, you don't do that. The first thing you do is you go and check what rate you're paying. Check what rate your bank is offering new customers for the exact same loan, but then go and get a couple of quick quotes from other competitors. So go off and get a couple of quick numbers from, you know, a low-cost lender, maybe one that you haven't heard from. But also, if you're with a Big Four bank particularly, go and get a competitive quote from a rival. And I'm talking another Big Four bank or, you know, someone like Macquarie or ING, someone where that bank really doesn't want to lose their business to, because it's all about competition for the bank.
So it's not enough just to say, hey, my mate's got a better rate. Can you match that or do better?
You can, but you will just present yourself as unprepared. So if you've done a little bit of research before you make that call, you have more ammunition on your side. They will go, oh no, Ricardo knows what he's talking about. He actually knows how to push my buttons, and I'm going to have to start talking, you know, proper discounts at this point in time. They are likely to, your bank is likely to give you a discount. If you haven't had one for a while, they're likely to give you a discount in the very first phone call. But I would suggest rejecting that out of hand, saying, no, that's not good enough, unless it's completely cracking, obviously. No, that's not good enough. I want to speak to your mortgage retention team. I am thinking about switching lenders. That really tells them that you mean to play business. And you can, even if you really don't like the rate that you're getting, you can ask them for a mortgage discharge form. That's usually enough to call their bluff.
And how difficult is it to do this? Do you have to gather all your paperwork when you're getting a different rate from a different bank? Is it that difficult, or is it easier than that?
So you're likely to get a decent quote with just a couple of phone calls. And what I would suggest is, if you're getting a quote, particularly from a Big Four bank, don't just grab the rate off their website. It's very confusing, but Big Four banks typically advertise higher rates than you'll actually get. It seems crazy. It's a reverse marketing trick. But what they do is, when they get you on the phone, they go, okay, Peggy, well, we really want you as a customer. And so, as you know, someone that we really want to win business from, we're going to offer you 2.5 percentage points off the standard variable rate. Well, that's all good and well, Peggy, but the standard variable rate is 8.8%, and 2.5 isn't really going, it's going to get you above average, not below average. So you really need to pick up the phone, haggle with them, and understand what their lowest rate is. It doesn't matter how big the discount is that they're offering. What matters is the interest rate.
How do you haggle? I mean, I'm pretty good at haggling for stuff off Facebook Marketplace or some other Gumtree or whatever. Is there a process, a sort of script you can use to haggle?
Yeah, I think that what you do when you call the bank, you've already got your ammunition all lined up, ready to go. And what that will give you is not only some good facts and figures, but also the confidence to do it. A lot of this is about confidence. And you say, look, I'm a loyal customer. I've been paying, you know, my mortgage diligently for the last, you know, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it might be. I would like a rate cut. I am thinking about switching lenders. I've already got some competitive quotes from this bank, and this bank. Can you match it?
At what point... So you've decided there are better deals out there. How do you go about switching? How easy is it? And what are the costs involved?
Okay, so switching is a little bit more work. Let's be clear about that. There's some paperwork to do, because what you have to do when you're moving your mortgage from one lender to the other, the new lender has to put you through the standard stress tests that they have to do with any new mortgage application. But you're likely to have to get a couple of pay slips, you know, give them some of your banking transaction history so that they can work out kind of what your expenses are and what your other costs might be. But what has happened in the last 2 years particularly even the last year, is that we've seen a digital arms race when it comes to the banks. Banks are falling over themselves to speed up the refinance process, which is the biggest winner out of this, are customers looking to switch. We've got banks as big as Westpac offering 10-minute application times. I think CBA's got a new arm called Unloan, which aims at doing, you know, applications that kind of time frame as well. It can take a few more steps to actually settle that mortgage, but the bottom line is things have sped up considerably, although that does vary from lender to lender. The other thing you really got to be aware of when you start to refinance is that it's going to cost you. So you might be dropping your interest rate, and sometimes you'll drop it significantly because banks typically want to hand out their sharpest rates to new customers, not ones that are haggling. So hopefully you're going to get an absolutely cracking rate, but you're going to have to pay a discharge fee from your old lender. That's around $350. You're going to have to pay around $300 in, you know, government fees and charges. It varies from state to state, but let's say $300. And then your new lender might charge you upfront fees. And they can come in all sorts of different names. You know, it could be an application fee, a settlement fee, a legal fee, a valuation fee. What you need to know in that process is that these are entirely negotiable, and if they want your business, they may just drop them. But know that there's some fees. That all said, for example, if you're going to refinance from, you're that complacent borrower, you haven't refinanced your loan or haggled for your loan since the start of the hikes, you're on a rate of 7.11%. If you haggle your way down to a rate of, say, 6.5%, then you're going to save over the next 2 years around $6,000 on a $500,000 mortgage. You've got 25 years remaining. $6,000 just by haggling down to a rate of 6.5 is what I've estimated. But if you refinance and get that magical rate of 6% or less, you could potentially save $9,916 on our calculations, even when we factored in those discharge fees, the government fees, and $500 of upfront fees. So often refinancing is actually worth it.
I guess with many of our listeners, we're more familiar with the larger banks. Is it true that there are more features that their home loan products offer than some of the smaller institutions?
So big four banks typically offer, you know, the standard features such as interest only. We talked about that before, and things like, you know, construction loans. You know, they do all offer an offset account, although sometimes you can be charged a higher rate or an ongoing fee for that offset account. And some of the smaller lenders don't offer some of those features, but some of the smaller lenders do offer some of those features. So what is really important when you're starting out in your refinancing journey, or if you're getting a new home loan, is understanding exactly what you need out of your home loan. Do you want an offset account? Is a redraw, you know, going to be just fine as opposed to an offset account? Are you an owner-occupier? Are you an investor? Do you want interest-only terms? Answer all of these questions, but I would suggest thinking about the here and now. There is no point going to a bank just because they offer construction loans because you think, oh, in 5 years or 10 years' time, you might do some renos.
You know, when you compare rates, you would typically see the smaller banks or digital banks, these new online banks that offer better rates than the traditional big four. I think there's this perception that the big four banks are the safest. And so traditionally, a lot of borrowers would go to the big four. What are the pros and cons of digital banks, the types of products that they offer, and what does it mean for the consumer?
Okay, so digital banks often come with lower rates because they don't have as big overheads. They don't have these, you know, big branch networks, ATM networks that they have to service and provide to their customers. And so often you see that translated into lower rates. I know a lot of people are nervous about, you know, taking out a home loan with someone that they've never heard of, but a couple of things to remember. They're the ones taking on the risk. They're the ones lending you the money. If they went belly up, and not many do, some of them get bought out, but often because they're successful. But if they get bought out or go belly up, you know, what's likely to happen is that your mortgage, along with every other mortgage on the books of that lender, is going to get transferred offer to a bigger bank. And if you don't like the offering that that bigger bank gives you, then you should be able to refinance out of it.
And a lot of these bigger banks have their own digital bank or online bank that's rebranded. So you might not necessarily know that, you know, Bank A, which is a traditional bank, has this digital bank that's called Bank B, but they're connected.
Sure do. So this is the newest thing in town in the banking world or the home loan world. So, you know, CBA, they now offer mortgages through Unloan. I think I've already mentioned that. NAB offers mortgages through UBank. Bendigo is offering mortgages through a range of different smaller white label products like Qantas Money and Timely Home Loans. There's a lot of them out there. So it's really important not to just dismiss them out of hand. They might have a funny name, but it's worth doing a little bit more research into these options. You might decide you like them, you might not, but the first thing I would do is pick up the phone and have a chat to them. So often you can get a good feel for a bank just by having a chat to the person on the other end. Ask them a couple of curly questions, see what the answers are. It's also worth checking out the live chat function, their app if you can, or check for app ratings. Things like that can really give you confidence that you're going to a bank that suits you. That all said, a mortgage can be up to 30 years. If you fundamentally just like the idea of being able to go into the branch and have a cup of tea with the branch manager, then maybe one of those bigger banks is for you. So do what you feel suits you and your personality and your financial goals best.
So, Sally, shifting away from mortgages for a moment, what about savings rates? What's a good rate there?
Okay, so savings rates really have not followed the same trajectory as home loans in that when the RBA hikes the cash rate, banks typically pass on that hike in full to all of their variable mortgages within the space of about 2 weeks. When it comes to savings, what we've seen is banks big and small have been picking and choosing which savings accounts get a boost and which miss out. So even among the big four banks, we've seen them pass on, in some cases, more than the RBA has prescribed to their goal saver accounts. They're the ones that come with monthly terms and conditions in order to get a maximum rate. But on their, kind of standard savings accounts, they've barely picked up off the floor. In fact, in some cases from the big four banks, if you've got like a NetBank saver or a Westpac eSaver, you could be earning around 2.5%. In the case of Westpac, it's got a one. It starts with a one. A 1%, well, it's a little bit over 1%. I think it's 1.1% on a Westpac eSaver account as an ongoing customer. That's crazy because when you look at the other end of the scale, the highest ongoing savings rate on our database at this point in time is 5.5%. Yes, you have to rub your stomach and pat your head and hop on one foot in order to get that maximum rate on an ongoing basis because it does come with some prickly terms and conditions. But if you set up your finances in a way that you can do that without having to sweat about it, then you can get that really attractive 5.5% rate.
If you bank, your primary bank is with one of the big four, and then you see a good rate for a certain savings product at a different bank, how easy is it to pull some of your money from your big bank to this other account, which is outside of your financial institution?
Oh, incredibly easy. I mean, the only thing you'd worry about is setting up safe passwords and things like that to make sure that your money is protected. I should say that if you've got money in a bank, the government guarantees it up to $250,000 per person per institution in the very unlikely event of a collapse. But, you know, when it comes to cybercrime, well, you know, the banks kind of walk away from it as quick as you can if you haven't set up a safe password. So I'd say, really, if you're going to move your money, and it's very easy to do, just make sure that you followed the steps carefully when it comes to security. But it can take as little as 5 minutes. Mm. And then if you want to move that money across, you typically just have to ring your bank and ask them to, you know, change your daily limit temporarily. Bang, the money is across.
I'm super cautious about transferring funds. So I will, if it's a large amount of money, I will just transfer $100 to start off with and see that everything's gone through okay before I start transferring little chunks after that till I get to the total. Am I being a bit paranoid?
Not at all. You don't want to get one of those digits wrong. That's exactly what you should be doing. You should I don't want to scare people from switching their savings to a different, more competitive rate. It's really important to do, to make sure your money's, you know, going as far as it possibly can. But when you're doing things like that, just have your antenna up. Be like Santa, I like to say. Check things twice, because scammers are about.
We are in a cost of living crisis. There are a lot of people that are struggling to pay their loans. What can people do if they need some help, if they can't meet their repayments? What should they say to their banks?
Okay, I'm going to take one step back. And so if you're struggling to meet the mortgage, the first thing that you should do is pick up the phone to your bank and ask for a rate cut or consider refinancing. This is one of the most effective ways to inject ongoing relief into your budget. You might not be able to refinance because you might not be able to pass the lender's serviceability tests now that rates are a lot higher. But if you can't refinance, pick up the phone and haggle. That's the first thing you should do. Then you should, you know, don't stop there. You go and see what else you can refinance, or switch to. It could be your phone, energy, internet, insurance, even your supermarket shop. Switching from more expensive brands in the supermarket to cheaper ones can save an amazing amount of money, because you're at the supermarket, oh, in my case, it's about twice a week, sometimes three times. Don't judge me. Okay, selling big ticket items, asking your boss for a pay rise, awkward conversation, but, you know, one that could actually really help your budget add up, or potentially, you know, consider a circuit breaker, which might be something that's quite extreme, like, you know, renting out a spare room or moving somewhere cheaper and leasing out your home. These are all options that you can consider. But if you've tried absolutely everything, and this was, I think, your question, Ricardo, if you've tried absolutely everything, what next? I would say call your bank, ask them for that rate cut. Do that before you then, you know, when you get that rate cut, then pick up the phone and ask them for help. It's really important to ask for help before you miss a repayment. You do not want on your record, a red flag, which can come when you miss even just one repayment, could be problematic for you. So you've got to talk to your bank before you miss that repayment.
What does that help look like?
Yeah, okay. So it can come in a large number of forms. It might be something as simple as switching to interest-only terms. Often that can be enough to help someone through, or switching to part payments. But they will look through your finances and try and come up with some workable solutions that's going to suit you and your budgets, but also, make sure that you're still ticking along in some form on your mortgage. The bank does not want to take your home. It is costly in terms of time and, of course, you know, legally the costs can be really sky high. So the bank is really going to do whatever it can to help you stay in your home. What I would say is, when they go through those options, and, you know, some of them might put you officially into hardship or onto their hardship programs, I would go and get some independent advice. That's really very important.
Would that be, there's a lot of free financial counselling services. Would that be a good place for people to start, do you think?
Absolutely. The National Debt Helpline, which is 1-800-007-007. I always say, think of them as James Bond. They're coming to save you. They will put you in touch with a free independent financial counsellor. What I do know from talking to them pretty regularly is that the wait times for those services, you know, can climb as high as 5, 6, 7 weeks. And so, again, calling them as soon as humanly possible is really important, because they can tell you the pros and cons of each different option that your bank might present to you.
I think one of the last things we should touch on, as I mentioned at the beginning, we know that interest rates are now more likely to fall than rise. How likely do you think, and what does history show you, in terms of how quickly the banks will pass on those rate cuts to their customers compared to the rate rises? Because we know that rate rises come pretty quickly. What about the cuts?
It will be very interesting to see, because history has is not judging the big four banks kindly, that's for sure. The banks don't have to dance to the beat of the RBA drum, and they will tell you till they're blue in the face that their net interest margins are under pressure, despite the sky high profits they keep turning over. So I think what I would say is, don't bank on an RBA rate cut until it's in your bank account, because one, there's plenty of economists out there And these are the best and brightest economic minds. This is not to discredit them, but there's plenty of economists out there saying that we might get 2 or 3 rate cuts before Christmas. But we know that these forecasts can be wrong. But also, the big four banks may not, and smaller banks may not pass them on in full. You don't have to look too far back in history to find evidence of this. The last time the cash rate went down in Australian history, which was November 2020, it was a micro cut, that has to be said. Not a single big four bank passed even a basis point onto their variable mortgage customers.
Sally Tindall, a lot of tips there. Sally Tindall, Research Director at RateCity. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for joining us, Sally.
Thanks for having me, Peggy. Thanks for having me, Ricardo.
And don't forget that the information in this podcast is general in nature and is not intended to be financial advice. You should consult with a licensed professional to make sure your decision is right for you. And don't forget, subscribe for more as we explore how to save money every day, from the supermarket to good health and more.